Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And Ben is off this week. So, we are here talking about the Great Philadelphia Comic Con. Yay!
Yeah, we both know why Ben's off. poor guy, he went to the con with us and he still hasn't recovered.
There you go. Well, you know, all those pretty girls and all those tight costumes, he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. Sure, that was it. Uh-huh.
So we went to the con last year and covered it, and they invited us back again this year to do press for the show. So this year, John actually went with us, as opposed to last year.
Much to their chagrin.
A little bit. So what did you think of the show, John?
I don't remember. I think I geeked out too hard. And they only found one hip flask when I walked in, so, you know.
So, seriously, I mean, it was, you know, it's not a huge show. It's not like New York Comic Con or San Diego or even, it's not even as big as Wizard World Philly, but I think it's a really decent show for the size it is. It's a mid-level show.
It was fun, and there was plenty there to keep you. I mean, if you spent the entire day there, you probably would cover everything. But then there's the problem of all of the, all of the gatherings at the shows that they had, and we missed them because they have like four at a time. So like the next day, Sunday would be a makeup day where you'd hit the ones that you hadn't hit before if they're still on. Although I'm really sad that I missed the one on Friday, the one about how to talk to something about how to talk to a pretty cosplayer without getting arrested, something like that.
That was weird. I don't remember what it was. It was something about how to talk to a pretty cosplayer, and it was like, really? That's a panel? They're not getting sued for this?
Actually, it's more like a PSA, but, you know. I'm sure they ended it with, the more you know.
There you go. I mean, what was shocking is that, you know, it's a smaller con. It's only their second year. But I mean, I've been to big cons and I've been to small cons. For being a smaller con, they had some fairly well-known names there. You know, Denise Crosby for one, because John, you spent a lot of time at her table.
What? There was 5 minutes. Granted, I only remember about 10 seconds of that 5 minutes, but I was there for only about 5 minutes. That was it. And she was nice. She was so nice. Out of all of them, she seemed to be one of the, what, I mean, okay. So all of, we appreciate all of the celebrities that go to these things, but man, she just seemed like she really appreciated people coming there. It wasn't like it didn't feel like she was there as a chore or she didn't want to be there or anything. It felt like she just liked seeing, you know, the fans. It was really good. And I got a picture with her. And then apparently I threw the rest of my money at her. And I guess, I think her, what was it? The last thing she said to me was like, security?
Something like that. You know, yes. And they had a good showing of Power Rangers there, which they did last year as well. Also, Deep Roy was there. It's a name a lot of people don't know, but people know him. He was in the remake of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I think is what the remake was called. Yep. He was the Oompa Loompas.
Yep, and that's all people know about him. It's all people seem to know him for, except that he was also in the Yoda costume.
Right, in Empire Strikes Back, when Yoda had to walk around. He was in the costume, and he was in the new Star Trek reboot. He's, I don't know the character's name. I'm sorry, Star Trek fans, but the little blue guy that hangs out with Scotty.
Kienzer, something like that. He's in Star Trek Beyond. He's going to be in Star Trek Beyond too.
Okay.
Yeah, he was Kienzer, and he's going to be in the new series that they're taping, Star Trek Beyond, as the same character, Kienzer.
Right.
I believe that's how you pronounce it. Of course, this is Superhero Speak, so we're going to pronounce everything wrong.
Yes. Names are always pronounced wrong.
Yeah, and you know, before I start doing with this, I could pronounce names right, but
oh yeah, blame me. And of course, the three big names that they had there was Ray Park, so everyone should know him as Snake Eyes, Darth Maul, and Toad from the X-Men movies. And they had, what's his name? James Frain from Gotham, who was playing Gallivant is the character's name, but he's also Azrael. As those who are watching this season know, it turned out that he's Azrael on the show. Yep. And of course, Robin Lord Taylor, the Penguin himself, was there. So.
And then they had Amy Jo Johnson stowed in some kind of broom closet way off to the side. That was just really weird.
That was weird. Like, okay, I've been to cons where, like, some people are off in their own area, but this was, like, not on the floor. It was a separate room where you had to go down a tunnel to get to it to see Amy Jo Johnson. It was a little odd.
Yeah, and then you get there and you're like, okay, this is the line for Amy Jo Johnson, right? No, this is the line for the bathroom. Okay, so.
Is that what they told you?
Yeah, no, yeah, seriously, there were two lines there. One was for the bathroom, one was for Amy Jo Johnson, and I think some of the people were in the wrong lines.
Oh my God.
You know, and I couldn't even see into whatever room she was in. It looked like the door was closed. It just kind of, I don't know.
That's because you go into the door and you don't come out.
Yeah. They were feeding her the souls of her fans. No wonder she still looks so good. That's totally hearsay, of course.
Totally.
I'm not starting any rumors.
No. But apparently a lot of people came into that convention and not everyone came out. But anyway. One of the things that a lot of people that we talked to noticed, unlike some of the, bigger cons around now, when you go in, the artists are off to the side. But with this show, you walked in and the artists were right there as you walked in the door.
Yeah. And that was good.
Yes. And there were a lot of artists. The guys from, Source Point Press, who were just on our last episode, were there. Of course, the one and only Neil Adams was there. And let's see, who else was there? Scott Hanna was there. He was there last year. We talked to him last year.
Yep.
Tommy Castillo was there.
Yep.
Legendary DC artist. Some other people that we talked to.
We talked to people.
Yes. And we actually recorded some of these conversations. So, you know, we might want to talk about that. What do you think?
Yeah. No. Play on, sir.
So the first person that we ran into was actually somebody who's been on the podcast before, Dawn Griffin, who was on our Spotlighting Women in Comics episode that we called Heroin Junkies. It was a double entendre, people. It was a joke. Hopefully no one was offended by that. Because we spelled heroine as in, you know, a female hero.
Oh. Well, that's a faux pas.
Well, that was Ben. That was his idea. So anyway, so we caught up with her and, you know, she was more than happy to talk to us. And without further ado, let's just get right into it. Here was our little chat with Dawn at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con. Hey everyone, we are here at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con, year two, and we are talking with Dawn Griffin. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Yourself?
Doing all right. It's my first day here. It's your second day, right?
Yes.
So what do you think of the show so far this year?
Bigger and better than last year. I would say even on a Friday, I did pretty well. And it was pretty sparse, but
right.
People were still willing. Like, I got a commission and sold some books, so... You know, pretty good for a Friday, especially with the show that was 2 days the year prior and added the Friday this year. That's always kind of a tricky thing for us creators, but
yes,
worked out pretty well. I'm impressed so far.
Well, that's good. So have you been meeting a lot of fans
Is that part of something that you enjoy, interacting with the fans?
Oh, definitely. Yesterday, actually, two people that have been following me for the past 5 years or so, and they will just, whatever I come out with new, they'll buy. And two of them came by my table yesterday, and I got to talk to them for a long time. And that's kind of the great thing about these medium or small shows, is that it's more intimate, so that you can
right.
sit there and talk to the fan. They don't feel like they have to leave your table, or that they're getting swamped or pushed around by the crowds or whatever, so that they can kind of just chill and get to meet you.
Right, right.
And that's what really cements those types of fans that will follow you to those shows and buy your stuff, because they had that 10 minutes, 20 minutes, even a half hour to talk to you like
right.
a normal human being.
Yes. So, because we were just talking a little bit before we went on mic, do you feel like, and this is just my personal opinion a little bit, but do you feel that the smaller and medium-sized shows, as you said, feel more like the traditional Comic-Cons than like the bigger shows like Wizard and at New York Comic Con anymore? Because they feel like they've become big media events.
Yeah, you nailed it. That's about it. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the big shows are worthless to creators.
Right.
I've done some, and they've been really good for me. I'd say the biggest Comic Con that also still holds true to being a Comic Con is probably Baltimore.
Yes.
It is excellent. It's all comics, and the people that come are just excited to meet the creators and see what's out new. They don't care if it's Marvel or DC or indie. They just, this is what you're a cool comic to me. All right, then I'll buy it, you know? It's hard to hold that, because the next logical step is to start inviting big celebrities and all that type of stuff. So
right, right.
But they don't. And they just kind of said, no, this is our wheelhouse, and we're going to stay here. And that's awesome, you know? And speaking of awesome, Awesome Con's also... also a pretty good show. They're basically Baltimore, but with the celebrities.
Okay.
But I've always done pretty good at that show. And they treat their artists well, you know, and that goes so far into dealing with a big show. How do you
right.
treat the artists? Because often a lot of people in Wizard World feels like it's an afterthought, you know?
Yes,
artists are an afterthought. Oh, they just help fund us, but let's just throw them in the corner. And that can be kind of a problem, you know, in terms of earning back the money, the lot of money that you spent to get the table.
Right.
So when shows will kind of, not necessarily put the artist first, but like put the artist as a main like attraction for the show.
Right,
and
right.
just work it that way. That's huge.
Yeah.
Big for us.
I mean, one of the things that I noticed right away last year and again this year is I walk in the front door and the artists are up front. You know, as opposed to, you know, a couple of the Wizard shows where you walked in and the celebrities were up front, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's typical. I mean, sometimes I've done a couple different Wizard World shows, and the one in Philly has changed a lot back and forth.
Yeah.
And I did the one in Cleveland, and that was set up in a way that I really liked when it was set up in Philly the same way. I was like, this works really well, where they have... You know, the vendors that are in the front, or the comic book shops and the merchandise, the plushies, the t-shirts, all that stuff. In the front, in the middle is the artist, in the very back is the celebrities.
Right,
so
right.
if you want to see a celebrity, you have to walk through everything to get there and then walk all the way back out.
Yes.
And it really helps get the traffic flowing. But other times, Wizard World Philly is very wide instead of long.
True.
So when you walk in... You walk into the midst of all, you know, the celebrities and all the vendors. Artist Alley is far off to the left side. It's totally an afterthought.
Right.
So I'm not so conflicted about the fact that Awesome Con and Wizard World are on the same day, because I think Wizard World Philly. Because I think I'll be going to Awesome Con. So I'm not really missing out too much.
I already have a commitment to go to Wizard World Philly, so I can't go to Awesome Con. Maybe next year.
I might do it again next year anyway, because I'm from Philly and it's kind of like a no-brainer to go. It's, you know, no accommodation costs.
Right.
But yeah, this year, if I choose between the two, Awesome Con, you know, so.
Cool. Do you have anything new that you have out that you want people to keep an eye out for?
Out right now on my table, Zorfert and Fred Book 4 is new to this show this year. I'll be working on another comic that will be kind of a preteen, teen, that kind of demographic.
Okay.
That's my next project is for that demographic there. So.
Cool. So your next show is Awesome Con then?
It's coming up. I'm trying to think. I have a whole bunch in a row, and they're all muddled up in my head. So I think actually the next show is, well, Free Comic Book Day is coming up.
Oh, that's right.
First week
yes.
in May.
Yes.
I'll be at the comic book shop in Delaware. And I also have a little library Comic-Con for my local library.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really great. It's a win-win. It's supportive of libraries who really need the funding right now.
Right.
And it's free for artists, usually. And it's a great way to get involved in the community. It's
right.
also great for artists that are kind of, I'm really scared about doing Comic-Cons, and it's a lot for me, so what can I do? This is a perfect thing to like dip your toe in and see if you like it, because it's small. And you're all taken care of. It's wonderful. So I got a couple of those things first before Awesome.
All right. Well, I'm going to say to our listeners that if you are a comic book fan, you should definitely go to AwesomeCon and say hello to Dawn for us.
Please do.
All right. Cool. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
So wasn't that great? And again, if you want to catch the full interview with her, go back to episode 148, our episode entitled Heroin Junkies, which is spotlighting women in comics. So
it's kind of funny. We're wrapping around to the point now where we're going to these cons and seeing people we've already interviewed, and we get to catch up with them again, you know, check up how they're doing, see what new stuff they've got.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I was I get surprised how many people I run into every time I go to a show that I know. And it's, you know, it doesn't matter where the show is. There's almost always somebody there I know. You know, like we ran into Eric Cooper, who wasn't there with a table for his Nightseeker books or anything. He was just there as an attendee, walking around in costume. So that was kind of cool. As everyone knows, Eric is the author of the Nightseeker books, and he's been on our podcast a few times. You know, so he was kind of busy, so we didn't stop and talk with him. What was funny is, though, we were walking by a table, and a woman jumps out and goes, "Hey, my friend says he knows you." And I'm like, "What? Yeah, he says he knows you, and he wants to say hi.
Yeah, usually at that point, we run because we owe money. But didn't turn out to be that in this case.
Yes, it was artist Chris Campana. I was at New York Comic Con last year, and of course working at my friend Greg's table, and he had the table next to Greg, and him and I just started talking and you know, all weekend, and at the end of the show we actually kind of talked about him coming on the show one time, and then, you know, one thing has led to another and hasn't materialized yet. Until now, I whipped out my microphone and I said, "Hey, let's do this." So he gave us a good, like, you know, 12-minute conversation. So here's our quick little interview with Chris Campana.
That should be on the podcast.
I was recording.
Oh, hey, everyone.
All right, everyone. Now we're here with Chris Campana.
Campana.
I'm sorry. I'm not Italian. I'm Polish.
It's Campana, actually, but nobody says that.
He mispronounces everyone's names, so it's
absolutely fine.
He's Ben Fear, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's going to go right there.
So, what do you think of the great Philadelphia Comic Con this year?
Well, I'm not kissing ass at all. The promoters are really, really great guy. Chris is great. Stan, the guy who's in charge of Artist Alley, has been insanely good to me. I know everybody in the alley loves him. So far, so good.
So one of the things we've been asking people as we've been going around, this is obviously a smaller convention than, say, Wizard or New York Comic Con. And to me, and some of the others have agreed with me, this feels like more like a traditional Comic Con. Would you agree to that, or...?
I think every con is trying to find that balance between too many celebrities, not enough creators. What do we know? Are we going to be fan friendly? Are we just trying to chase that buck? I would agree that this show definitely has. I'm a little biased, but this show has artists in mind. It has creators in mind.
Yes.
It's definitely a show for the fans. The thing about New York Comic Con that's so great is it has Artist Alley separate,
right,
so it really caters to the fans of the medium and that kind of stuff. But I think this is on the right path. This has a good balance.
Yeah. And they did something I haven't seen in years. You walk in the front door and the artists are right there, as opposed to the celebrities are right there and the artists are in the back. So that was cool.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's a weird balance because I like when the celebrities are sort of, except for New York, which does it because it's such a massive show.
Right.
I like when the celebrities are kind of intermingled with the artists. Because what you'll find now, because of TV and movies, is everybody goes to where the celebrities are and sometimes they're forgotten.
Right, right.
So when you have them intermingled, you get to, oh wait, these are the guys who actually do and draw the characters that I sort of am following now. Because you walk into a show now, there's probably 70% of people that didn't know Walking Dead was a comic.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, and they don't want a print of the Walking Dead comic book looking characters. They want a print of the actor.
Right.
So we're sort of forgotten in a way.
That's true.
And it happens all the time. You'll see these CBR just did a story about the quote-unquote fake artists who have the Google image of the actor. It's not really a drawing at all. It's just an art.
Right.
It's just an
Hell
image
yeah.
with a filter over it. So when shows like this give us an opportunity to be near the celebrities, people can see that we actually, we're the reason you're liking, you know, we drew this thing first, or we're the reason the cosplayer is getting so much attention, because we drew the character they're dressing as.
Right, exactly.
It's very important for shows to remember the creators. All that other stuff is great. I understand it goes to the bottom line and it makes the show more successful.
Right.
But we appreciate, I will tell you, you'll talk to every artist in here, and they will appreciate the way that Chris and Stan have done it, because they respected the people who came first, essentially.
Right.
You know, does that make sense?
Yes.
It's important to us. You know?
No, I totally get that.
Yeah, you
know. I've done enough of these.
You get it, yes.
I see how it goes. Who are some of the people that have influenced you in your career?
Oh, man, I can tell you, it's the easiest answer. When I was 10 years old, I saw Fire and Ice by Frank Frazetta and Ralph Bakshi, and that just made me fall in love with the sword and sorcery fantasy medium. I was right at the perfect point to collect He-Man action figures, and that did, I was everything.
Right, right.
That whole world was just everything to me, and that that influenced the hell out of me. Artist-wise, besides Frazetta, Joe Madera, big influence. Storytelling-wise, I'm a huge John Romita Jr. fan. If you read Man Without Fear and you're not just completely inspired by the way he did his sequentials, you're out of your mind.
Right, right, right.
Other artists, it's every day there's somebody new. You know, I look at Ryan Stegman now and I'm blown away by his stuff. I look, Aaron Cooter has a different style, but I like his stuff. It's just people who make me stop and say, oh, whoa, even if it's not what I would initially gravitate to, they're doing something imaginative artistically, and it speaks to you in some way.
Like, I got an alert on my phone, and I was like,
I really appreciate the answer you're giving, because even though, because a lot of artists who've been doing it as long as you have, might not turn around and say they're inspired by newer artists, but I mean, that's, you know, but that's true. You got to look around you and see what's going on, and you can draw inspiration from anything.
Well, you know what? You find guys in any field who they're so protective of their, you know, they're going to get this job, they're going to do this, going to do that. Paris! Hey, this is now, Paris Cohen.
What's going on?
You're doing a podcast, and I was how great your work is inspiring as well. Paris Cohen is a great artist.
We were talking.
Okay, yeah, I'll message you on Facebook, and then we'll talk about whatever you need. You know, I'll do it in the middle of the week.
Awesome.
Thanks, brother. Have a good show. Sorry about that.
No, that's perfectly fine. Hey, surprise guest.
The point I was getting to is that stuff.
Yes.
The point I'm getting to is that stuff is what this is all about. You know. I hate saying this stuff because it sounds like name dropping, but it's not. Tommy Castillo and Buzz took me under their wing.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things they said to me, said, look, we're going to do this, we're going to make you a better artist. We're going to rip you apart first. We'll make you a better artist. What you need to do if we do this is you need to pay it forward. There's a young artist to get with, to be or not to be a sketchbook, whatever. You need to pay it forward. And that's why I see it. And look, Stegman is head and shoulders above me. Great young, he's not even a young artist, he's just a fantastic artist. But, you know, to your point, if I see a young guy and his work is inspiring, I'm not so afraid of my my own job being taken or whatever, to not say, hey, take a look at this guy. Take a look at this artist. You know, I was sitting next to these two great artists next to me last week at a show. Great that they were female artists. I'm great to see female artists finally starting to get some kind of recognition because they deserve it. They like the medium just as much as the male artists do. And I made people come over. They needed my help, but I wanted people to see their work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Karma is a boomerang.
Yeah, that's true.
Do right by it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So that's... I just think you're supposed to do it. You don't take credit for it. You're supposed to be that kind of person. You know?
Right, right.
You gotta help each other out.
So that's a great lead into my next question. What kind of advice do you give new artists? People who want to get into this business.
So I don't think there's a one, a two, a three. They're all very important in my opinion. First, stop comparing yourself to everybody else. Because it's just a really good way to beat yourself down and not pick up a pencil again. My path is not your path. Do you know, to develop your own style, yeah, it's cool to draw. You want to draw like this person. You want to draw like that person. But trust your lines. Develop your style. And you'll realize that it'll become your art. There's going to come a day when you say, this is my stuff. This isn't me trying to be this other artist.
Right.
So that's an important thing. Trust yourself. It's okay to draw from other people, pun intended. But be your own artist.
Your armor, bro.
Learn the business. This isn't just coming to a show and talking comics and everybody's having fun. This is a job.
I haven't actually
treat it as such. This is not my hobby. This is my obsession. I draw 12 to 14 hours a day because I need to be better. Because when I come to a show, my name is on this stuff. So treat it with respect. Don't come to a show and take a table away possibly from an artist who really wants it because you want to whatever. Treat it with respect. This is your job. And the other one, and the thing that hates me the most, when I was coming up, a lot of people would say to me, the only good artist is a starting artist. And I absolutely hate that term more than anything else in my entire life. Because all it does is beat down the profession. All it does is make you think you'll never make it. And you better get a real job, because this isn't... No, this is a real job. Everything around you is art. Everything around you is created by somebody with a creative mind. Your shirt, this building, the car you drove in, the movie that you had to get paid so much for. There's a vision of a creative, artistic person.
Right, right.
So stop beating yourself up and stop listening to those negative people who maybe didn't follow their dreams and don't think that art is real and it's a job. That's my advice. Do not get beaten down by the people who didn't follow it and then say you can't follow it, you can't make it.
Right.
Just work your ass off and do it. Stop saying you're going to do it and do it.
Yeah. All right. So then the follow-up question that I always ask people is, how do you measure success?
Personally, at first it was, can I pay my bills? And I can. And that was great. But I think it changes. I think it goes in increments. You know, now it's, can I quote-unquote bank on a certain number at shows, or do I always have... I was always worried that I would have to go back to get a day job, quote-unquote. And then all of a sudden I realized, every day I guess success for me is every day there's another gig.
Right.
I don't go more than 2 days, thankfully. And this isn't ego. I'm humbly speaking about this. But I'm thankful that I've gotten to the point where there's always a commission in an email. There's always a project.
Right.
There's always somebody who says, hey, Chris did a great job on this. And by the way, even more than that, he's a good dude. Let's bring him in to work on this.
Yeah.
The success is the fact that my peers and the fans respect me and think enough of me to spend their hard-earned money on my work.
Right.
That's how I measure the success. You know, you can spend your money on 400 artists at a show.
Right.
You choose to spend $10 to $1,000 on me at any given time, that's success. Because I've made an impact in some way, and we've had a conversation in some way.
Right.
The art spoke to you, but we connected, and you know, like this gentleman here, I did a Black Panther for him, and he was walking away from the table, still staring at it.
Yeah.
He showed me his phone, and I was one of the artists he wanted to make sure he came and spoke to. That to me is, that's cool.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Because you're sitting at home, and you don't know if anybody's going to see your work.
Yeah,
that's
you know?
True.
You come to a show when you don't know.
Yeah.
And now, thankfully, it's finally a little bit, you know, it's hard.
Do you have any upcoming projects you want people to keep an eye out for?
I have the trade paperback of The First World, which is from Red Anvil Comics. So you go to redanvilcomics.com. It's a 100-page, issues 1-4, The Sword and Sorcery Fantasy, because of my influences. It's in Diamond. I think it'll be available from Diamond or previews next month. I have a book called The Way of the Gray, which is from Red Anvil Comics. And I've got some stuff that I kind of can't talk about.
All right.
It's for action figure packaging design. That's a little bit down the road.
Okay.
And
I mean, she's small.
I'm doing another 20 shows still this year.
Oh,
it's crazy.
So where can people find you online to get the information about the shows?
Well, I mean, just friend request me. I have zero issue with somebody saying I want to request Chris Campana, or they can go on the fan page, The Art of Chris Campana.
Okay.
Instagram, which I'm on a lot, is Campana Art.
Okay.
And Twitter, which I don't use at all, because I don't have that much important stuff to say, is Chris Campana 1, and it has the number 1 in it, because when I first signed up for Twitter, I didn't understand what I was doing, so I thought I had to put the 1 on there, which I didn't have to do at all. So that's why it's that. That's it. That's what they call it.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for asking. Thank you.
So I just started watching
that. Hope you guys enjoyed that. So what were some of the things that you really enjoyed about the show?
Oh, let's see. Well, I liked that the Gotham, was it the Gotham thing? What do you call it? The blah, blah, blah. We talk and they talk and they're on the stage. And
the panel?
Yeah, the panel thing. Yeah, I liked that that was so, you know, short. I like that, you know, I was sitting in the back that I could read while, you know, they were doing the panel on Gotham.
Okay, okay. So they had a panel with Robin Lord Taylor and James Fran from Gotham. And you know, it was interesting.
Well, you know, I got to say, to be honest, I gave up like so many people did after the first season. Apparently the second season has rocked a little bit and a lot of things are going on. Of course, that makes me both happy and sad, because happy, hey, the show's taking off again, and sad because holy crap, none of this, I mean, how does Batman come into being when all of this crap is happening? It's like, you know, most of his rogues gallery are going to be, you know, in the retirement home before he actually shows up.
That is true. That is really true.
But the other things I liked, the artist row was actually was fun. You know, normally it's just the artists in this case were very animated. When I don't know if it was a press passes or what, but we'd walk by and be like, "Hey, have you seen my stuff here?" Just, you know, chuck it in your face. I'm kind of sad I didn't buy the print from Tommy Castillo. His wife was there working his booth because he was having some issues. He's very sick. So if you ever get to buy any of his stuff, do it, because not only are you helping him, he is probably one of the best artists like ever. He's really amazing, and he's doing stuff now blind that most artists would love to be able to do with full sight. I don't know, what did you like? I've got other things I'll talk about them later, but go ahead, your turn.
I found the panel interesting, right? Because you know, the show definitely has a good fan base still. And so the panel was actually hosted by a friend of the podcast, JC Clark, who is the host of An Elegant Weapon podcast. And if everyone remembers our episode of from last year when we did this show, we cross-podded with him. So we both had our recorders out at the same time and interviewed together. And we had our interview on our episode, and he had his interview on his episode. So yeah, he's a big fan of Gotham right now. So it was really cool to watch. And one of the things that kind of shocked me was when they were talking about the show at the panel, like they said that everything that they do on the show has to be approved by DC. Jeff Johns reviews all of the scripts and they send back notes on the show, like what things they're allowed to say, what things they aren't allowed to say. But you know, if you've listened to this show long enough, you've heard us bash Gotham enough times and us thinking, no, you know what? DC must let them do whatever they want, but apparently not.
Well, it fits. It's because they are restricted from doing so much that they are doing what they are doing because they have nothing else to work with.
True. But you know what? We actually recorded the panel. So here is Robin Lord Taylor talking about how Jeff Johns reviews and approves all the scripts.
I wonder how much the comics come into it, like how much...
Very much, actually. I can confirm that Jeff Johns, the head of DC, signs off on every script. So everything is filtered through him so that we make sure that, you know, obviously with any sort of Batman interpretation, there are liberties taken and, like, you know, certain storylines are altered and changed, as we've seen throughout the 77 years of Batman. You know, things come in and out and change and things are different. But you know, Jeff is very much on hand, but not just our show, but also Flash, Arrow, you know, all of the others. Like he just Supergirl as well. He signs off on the script to make sure that we're not going too far outside of the canon, that it all still makes sense, and it all still is true to the DC universe, which I'm so grateful for because he's so brilliant. And to know that he's there watching over the scripts, you know, it's comforting because, you know, when we meet people who are big fans of the comics, like, we don't have to, like, you know, apologize for anything that happened or, like, you know, over-explain it because I can just be like, hey, just talk to Jeff.
Talk to the big cheese.
You didn't know I was recording that, did you, John?
Well, no. But then again, you didn't want security to come and kick us out for the fourth time that day. So, you know, I can understand why you hid the recorder.
The question is, where did I hide it?
That is not a question I want answered.
Oh, okay.
I will be more than happy to just be completely oblivious of that.
Okay. All right. I won't tell you this time.
Grief.
But yes, so, I mean, and Jason did a great job, I thought, hosting the panel. Like,
yeah, he did.
He had a lot of energy. You know, he asked a lot of interesting questions. He didn't fan on them too much, where I think if we were in a position like that, even though we don't like the show, we probably would be still fanning all over them.
You know what? I don't know. I think, if I had done that after the, my God, my brain is just not working today. Excuse me for a second. I have to drink a little bit here.
Oh, okay.
Now, after Denise Crosby, after I was coming down from that, I probably could have emceed anything and been very low key. But yeah, that was the only panel we made it to. Unfortunately, we were too busy walking around talking to other people. And
well, I mean, you were so excited at this con that you actually performed an interview or two yourself, like with Dave how do you say his name?
Ebersol.
Ebersol.
I believe it's Ebersol. If it isn't, I am sorry, Mr. Ebersol.
No, if it's not, he's sorry, Dave. So yeah, so he has his own book out, right? He's an independent. And
yep.
Did you drink away the memories already?
I'm working on it. He's co-creator and writer of Dash, an ongoing comic book series published by Northwest Press. And he's also trying to self-publish his own books.
Yes.
The Casket Girls.
But you know who could explain this better than us?
Him. Definitely him.
Dave Ebersol. So without further ado, here's your interview with Dave.
There we go.
And we're live. Kind of. So I'm here with Dave Ebersol.
How you doing?
And he has a table here at the Comic-Con Philly. Where he is the writer of several comic books. And would you like to tell us what you do?
Sure. I write a series called Dash out from Northwest Press. I co-created it with Delia Gable.
It's about a private investigator in the 1940s who uncovers kind of a supernatural cult at the heart of LA. And the catch there is that he's openly gay, and it was kind of hard to do that or be that in 1940. So he's kind of he has a lot of battles to fight.
Yeah.
I also have a self-published series called our label is One Shot Horror. Our first one shot is called The Casket Girls, and I do that with an artist named Sam Fryer, who is local to Philly. And
you said these are like one shot horror.
Right.
These are self-contained stories.
They're self-contained stories that are based around a urban legend that's localized. So The Casket Girls is based around an urban legend from New Orleans. The next one that we're doing is going to be based around an urban legend from this area.
So. Okay. Oh, cool. So around Philly.
Right outside Philly. Right outside Philly.
Nice. Yeah, there's plenty of urban legends around here, old New England. I'm sure you could find a lot of them. So there'll be more than just the one shot,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. The idea is to get enough of them so we can put them in a nice big collection.
Okay. And you've managed to self-publish. Was that hard to do, or just figured out yourself?
It's a learning process for sure. Because Dash is the Northwest Press, so all that is taken care of. But I have a much greater appreciation for my publisher than I did having to do it for myself.
Very cool. So you're doing many of these comics, comic conventions, or?
Yeah, I'll be the next one. I'll be at. I'm trying to think. The next one I have scheduled is Awesome Con in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And then the next one after that is called Flame Con. That's in
Florida. And using it to drive up all of the interest in the. I will include a picture with this because these look like very interesting. The covers are interesting. And kind of. Well, it's a mix of horror and noir. Yes, I am.
So one of the things we have been asking everyone is, what do you think of this is the second year for the great Philadelphia Comic Con. What do you think of this con compared to other conventions?
It's my first time here.
Okay.
So this is my second day. So today's a lot busier than yesterday was. And it's a really cool mix of independent creators and mainstream stuff. So it's a nice hodgepodge of both. So it looks like there's something here for everybody.
Cool. And besides Dash and Casket Girls, is there anything else that you've worked on?
So far, no. I have some things in the works that I can't talk about.
Okay.
But you can tell us, right?
Right.
Yeah, just ignore the microphone.
What kind of advice can you give to people who are starting out?
Just do it.
Yeah.
A lot of people have ideas. And say, it would be really good if it would be a really cool story if this happened, if this happened, whatever. And they never do it. And they talk about, they always talk about that idea. It would be really cool. Someone should do that. Well, then you should do it. That's my advice.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Kevin Smith does the same thing as well. Like, instead of sitting there saying, wouldn't it be cool if they made this movie? Just go make that movie.
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be cool if they wrote this book? Just go write the book.
Because someone's going to do it eventually. And
they're
not going to do it the way you would do it,
Right.
And then you're going to get pissed off because they didn't do it the way you did.
Right. Somebody's going to write that vampire book where the vampire sparkles, and they're going to make millions of dollars off it. You're going to get really pissed. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. That was a little too personal.
You leave your fan fiction out of it.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So where can you be found, reached on the internet?
You can get Dash on Comixology, the northwestpress.com. Our personal website is called teamdash.com. And all things One Shot Horror, go to oneshothorror.com.
Oh, our usual wrap-up question. How do you measure success?
How do you measure success? If you're happy.
All right. I like
That's
that.
Good. Yeah.
Good answer.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You guys have a question?
John, you're growing up so fast.
No, I was just very drunk.
Oh, is that how that works?
I told you, they only found one of my flasks on the way in. Security was very lax there.
Yes. There were crazies there, though. I will say that.
What crazies? I mean, let's see. We passed a Cylon.
Yes.
We passed the Joker talking to Doctor Strange. So all of you listening, Illuminati confirmed.
They're different universes, though.
Like I said, Illuminati. Well, what's the question?
Yes.
How many Deadpools did we get? Like 4, I think. I think we saw at least 4 distinct Deadpools.
Yes.
And then we saw the Sailor Scouts. The Sailor Scouts mixed up with the Marvel Universe. So there was Sailor Scout Thor, apparently. Try to wrap my head around that one. There were 5 or 6 Spider-Men from all the different types. I saw 1 Batman, 2 Batman, 3 Batman, 4, and then just for good measure, a Batman Beyond.
Yes. There was only 1 Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Oh yeah, that's right. And let's see.
You took a picture.
I took a picture of probably one of the greatest rumbles there could possibly be. There was Ash Ketchum and Darth Maul and Thor. That would be an awesome battle royale.
Except
don't use electric types against Thor. I don't think it'll work very well.
There was a gaggle of flashes at one point.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was one corner of the back there of the huge floor that they had, where it just seemed like they were gatherings of different cosplayers. But you know, you'd have 8 Flashes, 10 Thors, all the Batman were there at one point, and then of course, you know, the Harley Brigade, because there's always one of those.
There were quite a few Harleys walking around.
Yeah, every time we went back there was a different gaggle of another superhero.
Oh yes, though no Black Panthers, and I'm so curious.
No, there was 1 Black Panther. I didn't see him back there, but I swear I passed one in the morning.
Okay, because I'm curious, after Civil War comes out, how many Black Panthers will there be at cons going forward?
Well, the costume in the movie looks pretty good, so I'm sure there'll be a few more.
And I saw one, and you saw him too. He described himself, I believe, as the yard sale Doctor Who.
Oh, gee. Oh, him. Yeah. Oh, he was nice. He was cool.
So we're walking by a table, and then a gentleman starts giving us his sales pitch on his wares.
good salesman, though.
Yes.
I mean, you know, he knew how to talk your ear off, and he got you interested at least.
Yes. And he was funny and just, you know, an entertaining guy. So, of course, I whipped out my microphone and I interviewed the one and only Dan Nooks. So let him explain to you what he does and what you can look for from him. So here we go.
Hey, everyone. We're now here, still at the Great Philadelphia Comic Con with Dan Nooks. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm here at the Comic Book Convention showing these rectangular objects to the weirdly dressed denizens of the convention floor. Sound like a drunk Bill Cosby right there.
Don't bring up Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby jokes.
No, Bill Cosby jokes. Not in Philly. It's a sore subject right now.
Oh, they're pelting me. You can't see what's going on, but they're descending like zombies. It's horrible. Take my word for it.
So how's the convention been for you so far?
So far, it's been all right. It's been some interesting people. Met up with some old friends, connected with a few new ones. It's always nice to be back in the Eastern Pennsylvania area, checking out your fine cuisine, getting lost in your various neighborhoods that seem to go off, that GPS doesn't seem to know exist or just send you off in a randomly thicketed woods.
Sometimes.
I didn't know you filmed bits of the Blair Witch Project in this area.
No, but they did Signs.
Signs? Yeah, close enough.
There you go.
Yeah. Which is Alien, same thing, right? No?
So, as you just gave
us... questions?
As you just gave us that great pitch about your books.
Yes.
Before we started recording, tell the fans about your books.
Sure. I started back in 2002. Since then, I put out a number of titles. My self-published stuff includes, right now we've got the Paranormals, End of the World storyline. Your heroes include a feeble-minded robot, alcoholic werewolf, chain-smoking vampire, teenage witch, and angry Scottish dwarf. I did a Western called The Pistoliers, Tale of the West from a non-Anglo point of view, sort of think Manifest Destiny, but from the perspective of the Native American, from the ex-slave of that generation, from The Immigrant coming in at that time, all wound in this great action-adventure tale. We have Adam and Eve, bizarre love triangle in the zombie apocalypse. Basically, a guy running around on a talking Segway with his dog looking for the woman of his dreams will only be pursued by a zombie ex-girlfriend. And currently, I am putting together issue 10 of my online comic series called Impossible Space Tales of the Last Pit Stop. Basically, what if Area 51 were, in fact, a convenience store for aliens?
Nice. Awesome. Perfect. Perfect. And of course, you're dressed as the best Doctor Who.
Actually, I'm more of the amalgam Doctor Who. I just sort of like I regenerated, and then I kind of.
Well, you have the scarf, so yes. You have to be Baker with the scarf.
I took some parts of McCoy. I took some parts of Baker, obviously. Yeah. I took some tweed jacket from Eleven.
Right.
Basically, I'm the yard sale doctor.
Oh, okay. All right. I like that.
I found his clothes in his TARDIS. I'm the doctor now.
I think that's how you get his power.
Damn club!
So what do you think of this convention as compared to some of the other conventions?
It's a nice little medium-sized convention. Nice regional size. Not, like I said, I don't know about the celebrities, but it doesn't seem like it's overpriced or there's a huge line or too much of a hassle to get to see them. Nice amount of dealers, nice amount of varied artists of different mediums and different... influences coming in here and peddling their wares and trying to get their name out there. So yeah, no, it's definitely quite an impressive little show going on here.
Cool. So you definitely impressed me when we walked over, and I love your sense of humor. Who are some of the creative people that inspire you?
I guess in the realm of comics itself, I grew up 80s Marvel, definitely. I mean, I definitely ventured forward throughout other stuff like that. I mean, like stand-up comedians, Bill Hicks.
Okay.
Let's see, other guys like Carlin, Pryor.
Yep.
I'm a huge stand-up comedy nerd, so that's I'll like anything where they're like at a round table talking about the craft. That's like I find stand-up comedians are the closest thing to what I do in terms. It has like the whole going out on the road and trying to promote yourself and getting people to pay attention to you.
Right.
But at the same time, neither of us are cool like rock bands are. So yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the profession I most closely align myself with in terms of what I do and how I go out there and try to approach my audience.
Right.
And also you go out there literally like it's not exactly like getting heckled, but being ignored by a lot of people throughout the day tends to get wear on your nerves. How's it going? And I'm like, as opposed to a comedy club where you get drunk and the guys want to heckle you or at least engage with you.
Right, right.
Or actively not engage with you. It's sort of people who are sober and have a malady of social maladies to go along with it.
Socially awkward?
Yeah, socially awkward. That's a nice politically correct term that we apply.
Cool. So you said you're also here promoting the VA Comic-Con.
Yes, I work for Virginia Comic-Con down in Richmond, Virginia, owned by Mr. Brett Carreras. We have our June show coming up, June 25th to be exact.
Okay.
Down at the Richmond International Raceway. And then we have our big two-day show coming up. We've got a lot of great guests that we just announced. Tom King is going to be there. Denny O'Neill is also going to be there.
Oh.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a pretty big score. I'm pretty proud of Brett for that one.
Now I have to go.
Yeah, there you go. Richmond, Virginia, folks, man, it's going to be awesome. Weekend of Halloween, so the 29th and the 30th.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, you can dress twice in your Halloween costume and get away, literally, and get away with it. And then go to your local comic book store for... No, it's on the same day, so if you're in the area, you can go down to your local comic store and pester them in your costume and then come to us. So.
There you go. Sounds like a perfect plan.
And I also am starting I've been involved with them for 5 years. I'm starting my own one-day con called Pop Comaganza. Little one-day show,
okay.
And I live in Southern Maryland.
Oh, all right.
And it's going to be in Dunkirk in the week of Comic-Con International. People say, why are you competing against? I'm not competing against Comic-Con International. That's stupid. I'm riding their coattails, man. That's what I'm doing. I figure everybody seems to be interested more in that weekend than any other time of the year. why not feed off that that publicity like a parasite and have my own little one-day show and basically like say, no, we're not competing. We're more like the tailgate party that's 3,500 miles away from the main show. So if you don't want to wait in those lines and pay upwards of a few hundred to a few thousand dollars to go see that, pop $5 and come to my show. And if your kids are 11 and under, have them come in for free because we're going to have let them come in for free. If they're,
cool.
You're 12, you're screwed, but that's the cutoff point. You got an allowance, guess what?
So the question that we always like to ask our guests is how do you measure success?
Basically, at this point in my career, I've been doing this for 14 years. You've heard the term comedian.
Right.
I think of myself as the small press comic creator at this point.
Okay.
The guy that necessarily hasn't hit the big time, but everybody seems to know, what's his name? Boston comedian, not Lenny Bruce, but I want to say Lenny K or something like that up in Boston.
Louis C.K.?
Not Louis C.K., but like one of those kind of comedians that never really made it to the top, but all the other comedians know him. Right. I'm a lot like that guy. And my success is basically having enough where, hey, look, the bills are going to turn on. Hey, look, electricity. Look, the water's turning on. There are things in the fridge that are not mold related. Exciting stuff.
All right. And so where can people find you online?
All right, that's very simple. www.21sandshark.com. Also wanted to give a quick shout out to my buddies at FUBAR, which I did a couple of stories for them, and American History C, and By the Sword, as well as the Teddy Bear Tale stuff from Nick Davis. I helped co-create the Tristan character and designed a lot of the characters from that book.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
No, thank you guys.
So yes, he was an interesting one. Very full of energy.
Yeah. Yep, almost too much energy.
Almost.
Well, now we know what power. Now we know what power is the TARDIS. It's the gift of gab, apparently.
Yes. So yeah. I mean, it was a good show. You know, a little bit more about that panel that we watched. So here's the thing with Gotham. Okay, so I've thought about this, John, and our listeners at home. I think this is important for us to talk about here. I think Gotham is to Batman what Smallville was to Superman.
No, not even close. Smallville was much better than Gotham is because at least I swear I heard this exact argument on the floor there. Smallville actually had Superman. I mean, not Superman, but it had Clark being Clark Kent going to be Superman. Gotham has, you know, Batman sometimes, and it doesn't work. Although they did talk about on stage whether or not they would get like the Flash or Supergirl to guest star on that show, and that would take some doing. I mean, yeah, okay, multiverse and all, but I don't know that they have the same agreement that the producer of Flash and Supergirl, even though those two being on different networks, I don't think they have the same agreement that they had where they were allowed to have crossovers.
Right, right. They talked about it at the panel. Basically, I think it was James Fran chimed in on it and said that, well, they could do the Flash and Supergirl crossover because even though one is on CBS and one is on CW, they're both owned by the same parent company.
Right.
Where Fox isn't owned by the same parent company. So both the shows are owned by the same company, but it's a separate network. So that might be harder to work out the deal. So, you know, the other things that they kind of talked about at the panel real quick, they revealed a little bit about upcoming things on the show. I thought it was kind of interesting. Not having watched the show, but I think I am going to now that I can binge season 2, I think I might do that.
It's true.
This apparently was spoiled already, but Robin Lord Taylor confirmed it, and I'm going to let you hear it from him. But there's a character who is returning for the final two episodes this season. So go ahead, Robin. Tell them.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Like Fish. Like, that was an out there character. Oh, yeah. That was just top, and that's what was fantastic about it. Just unabashed, just go for it.
Man. She really brought something special to the show, and thankfully, I mean, it's already been spoiled, but she'll be back for the last two episodes.
Yay!
Season 2, so.
Yeah, woo!
I wasn't saying.
We have some.
We didn't say it. That's all.
Shocking, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. I can't believe that they're going to bring Superman, you know, back on from Smallville.
You weren't listening. It wasn't Superman. It's Fish Mooney.
You're right. I wasn't listening.
What else did they talk about? The future of Penguin. And what was fascinating is a lot of people kept asking Robin Lord Taylor about, like, what he did to prepare for the role and where he got all of Penguin's idiosyncrasies from, because he is kind of a quirky character.
And the fact that the studio is paying for all of his chiropractor appointments because of having to do the leg limp thing, which is throwing him entirely off.
Right. But he did talk about a piece of iconic Penguin wear that he hasn't donned on the show yet. But he is excited about the possibility. So here he is talking about that.
When I went in for the fitting, my first costume fitting for the second season, we had two new costume designers coming in, and they had pulled a top hat, and I saw it on the shelf, and I was so excited. But then, as, like, you know, they introduced that idea to Bruno and Danny, and Bruno and Danny felt that we're not quite there yet. So yeah, so but someday it's still on the shelf. I mean, someday it'll be on my head.
I, for one, would like to see him wear the top hat.
Well, good for you. That's all I can say. You know I'll binge watch it season two. But
the monocle might be a little much. I don't think that kind of fits in 2016. But the top hat you can get away with.
True.
Yes. And then
an ascot.
And finally, James Fram. Fran. Sorry, not Fram. He didn't give away specifics about where Asriel is going, but he did talk about what Asriel will accomplish by the end of the season, and I was kind of shocked that he said all of this. So I'm not going to even spoil it. Like, here, just listen.
My question is actually for James. I wanted to know if you could give us a little, I guess, glass into the future of what your character is going to be like. Are you going to reunite with your sister, or is Silver going to be involved in your new quest as Asriel?
Yes, please spoil next season if you don't
mind. Sorry.
I definitely meet my sister again. I definitely come after Jim again. I definitely come after Bruce again. But I don't know who I am. And I've been programmed effectively. And it's really, really interesting and clever the way they've written it. So I don't want to say anything about it.
So you're going to work with Hugo now? Is he going to be kind of your partner? Or?
I don't think Hugo would be able to. He doesn't think partners. I wouldn't want to be his partner. I'm more of his experiment.
Right.
A puppet master.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you very much.
See, so like I said, he didn't give away details, but he did, you know, talk about who he's going to go after by the end of the season. So we should all keep an eye out for that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That was good, definitely.
So what were you going to say, John?
Oh, no, I was just saying, what else, what other interesting things did we see on the floor here? How about the mystery boxes?
Yeah, that was interesting. It was a company that had a bunch of mystery boxes. So kind of take the idea of Loot Crate and where you get a mystery box every month. But now here is a guy and he's got boxes of one size that he sells for $35. And he's guaranteeing that the value in the box is at least $50. And then he had boxes that were go ahead.
Yeah, there was one that was 60. It was shaped like the TARDIS. He had the what was it? It was the friend box from Portal, the TARDIS, which was 60. And I forget the other one that was 30. I forget what that one was shaped like.
The block from Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, there you go.
The question mark on it. Yeah, so, and we actually ran into a couple of people who bought them. And, like, the one guy was showing us, he had like six items in it, and it was completely random, because they both bought the box that it was a couple that was together, and they were completely different items. But he had and there was an iPhone 5 case in there. It was a TARDIS iPhone 5 case.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't have an iPhone 5, it doesn't really help you. There was a couple pop figures in there, and then a really cool Hellboy action figure. So, you know, like,
you were likely to get something that you liked,
right?
But I don't know. It was a very interesting money-making scheme.
Right. Is it something you would want to spend $35 on if it just get one thing out of the box that you like? Yeah. It's tough. But, I mean, it's also the same argument when you sign up for, like, I subscribe to NerdBlock, you know. And granted, I've liked the T-shirt every one that I've gotten so far. But after shipping, it's $30 every month. And, well, you know, I've gotten a few things out of it that I like, but it's mainly the T-shirt. Is it really worth $30 a month? I'm actually thinking about canceling it. You know, I want to go with one that actually has a comic book in it every month along with a T-shirt. Then it's like, okay, there's two things that I'll definitely appreciate out of it.
Yeah, even if it's random.
Yeah, even if it's a random comic.
So let's see. What else did I see there? Let's see. I talked about the Cylon. Talked about there was at least one Superman. One Superman who looked like the guy looked like Dean Cain. Swear to God, he looked like Dean Cain. So it was that was pretty cool. And it wasn't Dean Cain, even though it looked like it.
Actually, it was Dean Cain. He's looking at work.
That's not funny because he's on Supergirl. He's probably gonna be in the next. The next season, he'll probably be on a while because they're going to look for him now.
Yeah.
Let's see. There was a sign that I took a picture of that says, a generous portion of your purchases goes to the fund our very worthwhile black market organ harvesting operation. Thank you, Cthulhu Bless.
That was actually on Dan Nook's table.
Okay. Yeah. And that was above an Elvira with a bazooka.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. It makes a horrible, horrible kind of sense. There were a lot of Robins and Batgirls and a surprising number of Red Masks. I don't know, or Red Hood, not Red Hood, Red Mask, is it?
Red Hood.
Jeez, I should know this. I'm a DC guy. Yeah, Red Hood. That's
because of Arkham Knight, the Arkham Knight video game, because he's the main baddie in the game.
Oh, well, I haven't played that, so kind of lost it on me.
So, I mean, that's the whole thing. You kind of look at like what is going on in pop culture, and that's where you can usually see what costumes are going to be at a con.
Yeah.
So cool. I mean, I think we really enjoyed ourselves. I mean, it's a shame Ben couldn't make it with us tonight, but
he was there. He was there at the con.
He was there. He enjoyed himself. He had a really good time. We're definitely going to be going back next year. We hope that if you didn't make it out this year and you do live in the Oaks, PA area or the Philly area that, you know, you'll check it out next year. It can only get bigger and better at this point.
Yeah. Same as us.
But we get bigger, but we don't necessarily get better.
Well, at least I know that I need to bring a better mic setup next time.
You just need to learn how to use that mic.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're gonna end this episode. I am gonna end with a little bit of a down point here, completely unrelated to the Great Philadelphia Comic Con. As everybody knows at this point, last week we lost Prince, one of the all-time greatest entertainers, at least in the last 50 years. And I was a huge fan of his. I'm sure, John, you know, you grew up in the 80s as well. You know?
Yeah. Well, when you say like Elvis, Madonna, Prince, you know, and Michael, he's one of those people that everybody knew, and he was incredibly prolific. He came out with stuff that you've heard. It doesn't matter what age group you are. You could be like 10 years old. You've still heard some of his stuff.
Exactly.
There's no way you've missed it.
I mean, because he was consistently working from the 80s all the way up through, you know, the current decade.
Like, and had talent coming out of his freaking ears. He finished songs in just one day, normally.
Yes. And fully done and produced songs.
Yeah.
So as I think, as a musician myself, and as any musician could say that, you know, when they're here, all they want you to do is listen to their music. That's all any musician wants. So this is the best way for us to remember him. So as we leave you this week, let's go crazy. Let's get nuts. We're not going to let the elevator break us down. So until next week, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Gather here today and get through this thing called life. And if the elevator class is free forever, that's a mighty long time, but I'm in a very crazy.
world you're living in. Take a look around. At least you got friends. I call my old lady. Old friendly world. We're not